Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Jeff Kaplan, who's the founder and partner of Kaplan & Walker. And this is an annual right for Jeff and I. I think it's our eighth year in a row that we've done a program on corporate compliance. And this one will specifically target the anti-corruption area. And so the first question for you, Jeff, is what's new in the anti-corruption enforcement area? I know the number of law firm memos I've seen on the topic is skyrocketed this year, so I know it's quite a bit.
It is quite a bit. And first of all, let me start by saying I very much appreciate being invited back. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Brock. And on enforcement, the sheer magnitude of it, I'm not sure if it's quite new, but the fact that it just keeps growing is the big story. A recent analysis on the FCPA blog indicated that since the start of 2008, 58 companies had settled FCPA-related charges with either DOJ, SEC, or both, paying a total of $3.74 billion in penalties, disgorgement, interest, and so forth, an average of $64.5 million per action, which is a lot of dollars for an average in the enforcement area. And indeed, eight of the top 10 settlements from a monetary perspective have been this year or last. So that's continues to be the big story. Sort of a less well-known but also important piece of that is so-called Caremark suits, meaning suits against directors by shareholders in the wake of a compliance failure, have become common in the anti-corruption area. They're not really common in any other area. And I guess that's predictable. Makes sense because the penalties that I just described can be so costly to shareholders. And the type of role that a board can play, making sure that there's the right resources for an anti-corruption program and the right clout for the program, are the sort of things where a board really can make a difference. So that's a less well-known, but I think important piece of what's new in the U.S. And then outside of the U.S., there's just a whole world of activity of all sorts, all types. China adopted its own FCPA-type law a few months ago, and the ramifications of that, I think, won't be known for quite some time. You're also seeing in the enforcement perspective follow-on actions by other countries in the wake of FCPA settlements. Nigeria has done that and collected a large amount in fines. We saw it recently, too, following the settlement in the U.S. of corruption charges against Alcatel-Lucent in Costa Rica, the venue for some of the corrupt acts in that case. And that's just the tip of the iceberg activity, you know, really around the world, and no reason to think it'll end anytime soon. And I say that because increasingly governments need money, not just in the U.S., but pretty much everywhere. And big fines, the type that these prosecutions can bring, I think will become seen as a reliable source of revenue. So I don't see this as a passing fancy. I think it's kind of the new normal, if you will.
Yeah. So what I understand you've recently completed a benchmarking survey in this area. What did you find? Or why did you do it?
Well, first of all, I should say that the we did this survey because we think that the anti-corruption area is one where knowing what others do can be immensely valuable. There is law, anti-corruption compliance law, of course, but it tends to be very general. And so having a sense of the good practices, sometimes best practices of others, can be a very helpful input for designing and operating a compliance program. Having said that, I should make the disclaimer that compliance programs of all kinds, FCPA and otherwise, do need to be risk-sensitive and otherwise tailored to an organization's needs. So this really is just one input. But anyway, let me describe some of the findings, and I should say that this was a survey that we conducted with the FCPA blog, and one can learn more about it at the FCPA blog's website. But here are some findings that I found interesting, and I'm going to pick ones that I think have practical import, but which are kind of outside some of the mainstream topics that one typically hears about in surveys, though all are important, I think. And the first of those concerns what could be called compliance and ethics program integration procedures. And these are procedures for ensuring that an entity that one has acquired is fully part of a compliance program from day one, and there have been case after case, including one just a few days ago, where companies have been have suffered, I think, for not having a sufficient approach to integrating compliance programs in entities that they acquired. And I think the positive result, positive finding from our benchmarking survey was that two-thirds of the respondents, and we had more than 100 respondents, indicated that they do have formal procedures of this type, M&A compliance and ethics integration procedures. And my hope is that that result, combined obviously with some of the case law that I've described, will help companies that haven't taken this step do so. And in doing so, I should add that compliance and ethics integration procedures shouldn't be limited to anti-corruption, because if one looks at the history of compliance and ethics failures, which is as long as the history of compliance programs, and that's really about 20 years, there are numerous instances of sometimes ruinous shortfalls of this type involving areas besides anti-corruption. So that was one, I think, interesting finding. And the second has to do with monitoring, and anti-corruption monitoring, obviously. And monitoring, I should say, is real-time checking. Auditing is after-the-fact checking. And what we found is that more than half of the respondents have formal requirements of this type, too. And an example would be that on a periodic basis, business personnel review third-party intermediary invoices, agents and distributors and so forth, to ensure that they do not suggest violations of anti-bribery laws. And it's important to do this, I think, because there are practical limits on how much ground companies' auditors can cover in a given year. And so having these type of real-time measures can be key to effective anti-compliance programs, and so it's encouraging, I think, to see so many companies doing this. And a third area has to do with formally designating a senior company official to oversee an anti-corruption program, compliance program, and what we found was that almost all companies had taken this step, only 4% hadn't. And it is an important step because, well, just the common sense of it, this is, you know, it's a complicated area and you need somebody senior to make sure that all the pieces work as they should. But I think there's also a legal expectation there, and it comes from OECD anti-corruption compliance standards, which were promulgated in 2010, and which are now used by the Department of Justice in reviewing compliance programs in anti-corruption cases. And those standards do provide that companies should designate a senior company official to be responsible for this area. So the fact that so many companies are doing that is a plus, in my view, and something which can hopefully encourage others who haven't taken this step to doing so. Now, related to that, the area of anti-corruption compliance management is the topic of governance. And here we found that a majority of boards of directors of our respondents do receive reports specifically about their company's anti-corruption compliance programs. In other words, it's beyond general reporting on hotline calls and things like that, but specific to compliance measures in this area. There's certainly a logic to that, given what I said a few minutes ago about the risk to directors and the need for directors to play a part in this area because of the high risks that there can be of an anti-corruption compliance failure and the costs to shareholders and so forth. So I think that having that sort of seeing that boards are doing that, at least the majority of the boards of the companies we canvassed, should, like some of these other findings, be a source of encouragement to companies that haven't gone that far yet to take that step. And then lastly, more than 40% had an external assessment devoted either in whole or in part to their company's anti-corruption compliance programs. And that, I think, is important, too, because these programs are operationally complex compared to at least other kinds of compliance efforts, and having somebody who's seen a lot of them and who's also independent can really help, at least I've found, in terms of maximizing or optimizing how well a program works. And then certainly in the event of an investigation, the very fact of commissioning an independent review should make a positive impression on the government, because that's not the kind of thing one would do unless one were truly desirous of having an effective program. So those are five findings. There are lots more. There were 48 questions. We cover really, you know, the whole landscape when it comes to anti-corruption compliance programs. And as I said, more information is available at the FCPA blog.
I really appreciate it, Jeff. You are the man, and this is great information. The benchmarking is always really helpful, I know, to the companies out there struggling with what to do. Enjoy your day.
Well, thank you very much.
Look forward to next year.
I really appreciate it.